My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
It's 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock. This is Prime Time on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready?
This is a Football Friday edition of Prime Time with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. It's your sports bros, Rop and Souk.
Sada.
I'm Rop, that's Souk right over there.
Right here.
Look at him.
It
is Friday the 13th.
What was that? You fire up some random rock clip?
Wasn't me.
No, that was me.
Sada.
That was our SportsCenter update bed that hadn't been killed yet.
Bald is beautiful day. Sakanic looking beautiful, at least for today.
The hat is off. The beard freshly trimmed.
Football.
Let's go.
Joey Harrington will join us in about 25 minutes. We'll discuss, the Civil War probably.
I would think so. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he wants to talk about something else. What if Joey has hot apple cup takes?
What if I told him, what do you think he'll say? I'm gonna tee this up. I'm going to ask him. Oregon State's going to win this game, but I will guarantee that the Ducks make the college football playoff.
Oh, he'll take that.
He will?
Yeah.
You don't think he'd take his chances?
Guaranteed.
The Ducks make the playoff
guaranteed
anyway?
Guaranteed you're making the playoff?
Yeah, but you have to give the Beavs the win over the Ducks.
Wouldn't that be good, though? Because then the Beavs would feel good about their season, and then you know.
Well, therein lies the crux of the question to a diehard Duck. Like, to me, makes sense to just take it and get to the playoff. But not when it's your heated, maybe not quite as heated as Washington, but
sure,
it's your in-state rival.
I'll be interested. I'll say he takes it, but
I'm going to guess he says no.
He says no? Okay.
We'll see. And for those of you that know we taped that,
yes,
it isn't taped today. He's coming on live.
No, it is live.
So this is not a bit.
That's right. Live radio.
As far as you know.
Everything's live. And then in our next segment, we'll just check in on what the vibe is down there in Corvallis. But the club tonight, we got a lot of Souk follow-ups in my notes here. We've got yard sign war follow-up.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Ohio State
flags
in Eugene follow-up. And there was something else you were teasing last night, and I don't remember what it was.
No, it was something that you wanted to follow up with me, but you couldn't remember what it was.
No. You, at the end of the show, you said, I've got this for tomorrow, and I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, the kid that made the nuclear reactor in his backyard.
That's what it is.
I got down a rabbit hole yesterday for like 45 minutes reading about this. I guess he's not a kid anymore. He's a kid in the 90s, but it was one of the most unbelievable stories I've ever read.
Well, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Right now,
your show's better than this.
The Hot Five at Five.
Oh!
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot Five at Five.
That's hot.
The Hot Five at Five on Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot Five at Five with Isaac and Souk. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food, the most popular burrito spot in Oregon. Online at victorico's.com.
You ever see a cheetah stretch?
Number five.
Jacob DeGrom returns for the Rangers tonight against the Mariners.
I'll blow something out.
Seattle blew last night's game. They're now 4.5 back in the West. DeGrom has not pitched since April of last season.
Yeah.
I
honestly think, how many games has he pitched since coming over from the Mets? I honestly don't think he's thrown much at all?
I'm going to say 15.
Because they gave him a lot of money when New York let him walk.
Elsewhere, the O's need a win. Baltimore, they are two back of the Yankees in the AL East, and right now they are being shut out by the Tigers, 1-0 in the seventh inning.
The answer is 6. He's pitched 6 games.
That's it?
6 games.
Oh, my
God. I don't mean to laugh.
Just, but I'm laughing.
I'm laughing a little bit.
The Mets are now just 2 games from the top NL wildcard spot currently held by the D-Bags.
Dude, I'll tell you what. It's been a hell of a year. That thing is
wild
bizarre.
Ride.
Yeah, I mean, they were going to be sellers.
They are winning again 6-0 in Philadelphia. The Mets are in the bottom of
number
the
fifth. 4.
It's crazy. Braves are beating the Dodgers 5-1. Dave Roberts came out today and said, Shohei Ohtani, the chances of him pitching in the postseason are not zero.
Dude, that is crazy. And you brought up, what if they just bring him in and he's their closer? You bring him in at the end of games.
Look, if he can pitch, why would you not do
exactly.
that?
Exactly. And by the way, what? He's a 47-47 right now, I believe.
Is that what he's at?
I think he's got 47 of each with however many games, 16, 15 games, something like that left to play.
One of Georgia's key players has been arrested. Cornerback Daniel Harris is facing multiple misdemeanors.
I swear to God.
Including reckless driving.
Can Georgia not just do like an NIL deal with Uber and Lyft? Some sort of car service?
He was going 106 miles per hour. It was an unregistered car. He had an expired license. He had no insurance. He was not wearing a seatbelt. At least 7 displays of poor judgment. He is out on bond. He had to pay $50.
It was 41 miles an hour over the limit and on a wet road.
It is an amazing lack of self-awareness right there. Just doing all those. You had a light? Nah, it's not licensed.
Number 3.
Insurance? Nah, I don't got any of that.
Just a 6th career back surgery for Tiger Woods, that's all.
No big deal, right?
He underwent a nerve impingement procedure this morning. Homie played just 5 tournaments this season. In other injury news, Chiefs receiver Hollywood Brown is opting for surgery on his clavicle. Andy Reid says he could miss the entire season.
Yeah, I saw a big old Instagram post, and he was bummed. If you saw, remember, he came down in the preseason and came down hard on that shoulder. But at the time, we were told that it was just it's kind of a week-to-week thing, but probably wasn't healing well, a little minor crack, and now they'll go in there and put some screws in it.
Christian McCaffrey has been ruled out by the Niners for Sunday's game against the Vikings. He has that calf injury. He also has Achilles tendonitis.
Well, they said this was a whole other thing. Shanahan came out today and said today was his worst day, pain-wise, since getting hurt, and they're now considering IR, which would be a minimum of 4 weeks.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, a whole Madden curse. Fantasy football dudes driving off a bridge right now.
Oh, dear.
Number two.
Miami is in Seattle next week without Tua Tagovailoa, most likely.
Yes.
His 3rd concussion in 720 days happened last night on Thursday Night Football. It will be the Skylar Thompson show. Miami not sure if they'll place Tua on IR yet. They say they will be signing an additional quarterback, but it's not clear who.
No. And look, things weren't going well in Miami before Tua got hurt. Two of those picks weren't his fault, but I was not a believer in Miami, and they were getting boat raced even before Miami, or before Tua got hurt. And I don't think Skylar Thompson is the answer to what ails the Dolphins.
Why don't you think that?
We can talk about this. I thought last year the Dolphins were the most overrated team in football, and I thought they were the most overrated team coming into this year as well.
Well, haven't we already talked about that?
No, they're just fool's gold.
Well, you've already said that.
They do a lot of window dressing, and there's no real substance to what they do. And it only works against bad teams.
And Mike McDaniel's looking like maybe he's on drugs now. Have you seen that?
He certainly looks a lot different than when he got in.
He's looking very Miami.
There's like an Instagram slideshow of the day he started, and then his first day last year, and his first day this year. It looks like a capo for a Coke ring.
A lot of cocaine down there. I just wonder if he's dabbling.
Should I go down?
I believe he's sober.
You know what? I'm going to have to go down and do an investigative report.
College football tonight, Kansas-UNLV. Good little matchup being played in Kansas City. Right now, the Jayhawks, my Jayhawks, are leading 17-3.
Rock track.
Even better matchup kicks off shortly in the Little Apple, Manhattan.
Going on right now.
Oh, is it already? Oh, yeah, no score. Okay.
Arizona driving.
Number 14, Kansas State, is hosting number 20, Arizona. Now, shockingly, this is a non-conference game, even though both teams are in the Big 12. It was scheduled before Zona's move to the Pac from the Pac-12. Neither could find replacement opponents in short order, so
yeah, here we go.
It's a little non-con game.
It's very strange. And Arizona is wearing the same helmet that Texas State was wearing. The cursive cats on the side of it, which is a little odd. I've never seen that.
Do you think the Texas State people drove them to Manhattan for them to wear?
I think it's a little weird. I've never seen Texas State wear the cursive cats.
Hey.
And I saw that last night, and now Arizona's doing the same thing.
I've never seen Arizona do this.
Got to save money, man.
I guess.
Got to share helmets.
Share some help. Well, Arizona isn't a budget crunch, so, you know.
Yeah, didn't they lose like $270 million?
Yeah, they no one can find out like what happened to it. They were like, well, we just misplaced $200 million.
Victor Rico's Mexican Food, the most popular burrito spot in Oregon. Order now at victorricos.com. That's your Hot 5 at 5. Vibes in Corvallis, next on The Fan.
That ain't no bird.
Well, tomorrow should be quite interesting down in Corvallis. Jace.
I would think so.
Yeah. You've got two programs. I mean, I would defy you to find me two teams that play in a game that represent any more divergent paths in college football.
No.
Than these two.
I mean, you can make the argument Washington, obviously Washington State are in that same boat. I mean, It's the same thing. Washington playing for a national championship. I think the long-term prospects at Oregon, people are a little more high on. But it's weird because you have these two games, and it is very much – no one in the country can relate to what Washington State and Oregon State are going through.
No.
You just can't. And great programs, great tradition. Rivalry game means so much. And, you know, they've just been left out in the cold, and now, you know, they're rebuilding their own thing to a much lesser extent than what they had before. But I can imagine that the scene in Corvallis, not so much in the Apple Cup, because it's in, I just hate that's at Lumen Field. It's just, it's going to be so weird and sterile. I'm guessing that in Corvallis, if this game is close, this will be one of the best environments that we've seen in Corvallis in the 20 years we've been doing this.
Well, on one hand, you have to think that even if it's not close, it's just like right at the beginning. This is going to be as jacked. They have to be as jacked to host Oregon, considering all that's gone down.
Ever.
Yeah, I mean, they want to kick the crap out of Oregon.
Imagine this. Imagine, be careful. I'm not trying to make light of any sort of like violence, but imagine like, you know, the bitterest divorce that you can think of, right? And then less than or a year later, you get to extract some sort of really physical revenge on that person. I mean, these opportunities just don't happen that often. And I would assume that everyone in that stadium, from coach to player to fan, wants to get their pound of flesh out of Oregon. And
you'd think.
You would think.
But on the other hand, a glimpse into the future, which we just got yesterday for the Beavers, is kind of demoralizing.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think they were thinking, oh, maybe Big 12 or maybe ACC, this will be fine. But now you look at the whole thing with the Mountain West teams coming over, it's
this
won't be fine.
Well, you got one of two things. Either you view that as that's a real downer, or it's just another log on the fire and you want nothing more than to say F you to your big brother. And like I said, from a Beaver perspective, I think the first two games of this really add fuel to it because Oregon has looked beyond beatable. Beyond beatable. I think this would have a very subdued — I can't say very subdued. It would be a much different environment had Oregon won by the point spread in those first two games. If they beat Idaho by 40 and they beat Boise State by 35, there's a different feel going into this game. But eking out those two games at home, that place at Reser, if it had a roof, it would get blown off. The potato salad is going to be flying in Corvallis tomorrow, and I really wish I was able to go down to that one. Because originally I was like, you know, whatever. I thought Oregon was going to steamroll in that. I would like to be in that stadium for that one.
Yeah, imagine if they beat him.
Oh, God.
Just the meaning.
It'd be incredible.
Just the meaning of that.
Yes.
And would that be the biggest moment in their history? I mean, they're already at a seminal moment in time. And then just for everything that would mean to beat Oregon after everything that's gone down and what the future looks like.
Outside of, and I'm going modern, right? I'll take modern history. outside of the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, dude, drilling Notre Dame like that.
That was huge. Yeah.
That's huge. I mean, premier program like that. Many people think you were the best team in the country that year. And, you know, the crappy part is in modern day, you would have gotten to prove it. Oregon State would have, you know, they would have had a chance. I would say that if they beat Oregon tomorrow, that's the second biggest win in modern history. It just, it's not much bigger than that. I mean,
in Oregon State history.
In Oregon State history. Yeah. Like, you know, the one at LSU you let slip away, that would have been huge. The big win against Wisconsin. I mean, there just hasn't been a lot of these moments, right, where you're like, this is program defining. You're trying to build a new path forward. You're starting a new Pac-12, right? You're trying to plant your flag in the ground and tell your fans, tell your players, tell your recruits, we're going to be as good as ever. And here comes Oregon with all this preseason hype, number 3 in the country, now number 9 in the country. But you know what I mean? With, you know, one of the best teams, and no one's given us a chance, and Dan Lanning's the greatest thing in the world, and to come into our house and beat them? I mean, it's
mean a lot.
I'll tell you what, I think it'd be the biggest regular season win in program history.
You ever see a cheetah stretch?
It would be amazing.
Yeah, I just think the meaning of it. Maybe you could say it's not the best win, but the most meaningful win, perhaps.
Yeah, someone said it's like an opportunity to publicly embarrass someone after a bad divorce. Yeah, because I didn't want to do the whole violence thing. So let's go with that. To publicly humiliate your spouse after a bitter, bitter divorce, you know, because Oregon State fan, and whether it's fair or not, they blame Oregon for pulling out. Oregon and UW had a chance, both of them, to save the pack, and neither one of them was going to do it, but they had a chance at the 11th hour to save it, and they didn't. And by the way, Oregon State wouldn't have saved it either. If they had gotten the invite, they would have bolted too. But, you know, it's certainly, they have every right to feel that the finger should be pointed at those two schools, and you know, we get a chance to maybe settle that on the field. But as someone does point out, and I think this is a good one, you still have to have the horses in the barn, and I'm not certain that the Beavers have them. And that's a fair point. In order to beat Oregon, you do kind of have to, you know, Boise State was better than Oregon last Saturday, but at the end of the day, they didn't have the horses. Oregon's athletes were just better, and the special teams and the couple big plays. Think about that. Boise State was better than just about everything other than probably 4 plays. And that game, 4 plays.
Yeah.
And that was simply Oregon's receivers being faster and 2 kick returners being better athletes.
I would put it this way, though. If that happens again, I mean, Oregon can't always win those games just because they have better athletes. I mean, that game was so close. The way the ball bounces, different, you know, a few things go differently. Yeah. Boise State wins that game. So, I mean, I don't think that can be chalked up to, well, Oregon just has better athletes and they're always going to pull those games out. No. If Oregon State drags them into deep water.
Yeah.
Dude, they can easily beat them. Well, easily, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They can win the game. Just because they don't have as many horses as they had last year doesn't mean they can't.
Yeah. And that's the other stinky part about this whole thing is I'm watching Arizona right now, Arizona, Kansas State. Arizona's up 7-0. Arizona's a good football team. How nice would it be to actually see the Arizona team the way it was supposed to be constructed? I mean, you add Jonah Coleman to this, you add T-Mac to this team already, and you'd have a potential playoff team in Arizona with or without Jed Fish. And that's the same thing if you're the Beavs, how much of that stings in that. Imagine going into this game right now with Oregon playing the way they're playing, but you have all the guys that left the program, right? You get all the transfers back. You get Aiden Childs as your quarterback. You get the Arnold brothers. All those guys are back. And how would we talk about this game if Oregon State hadn't been ripped apart by the transfer?
Yeah, we'd certainly be talking about it differently.
Yeah.
But they beat them 31-7 last year. Yeah. Was that the score?
Something like that.
And the year before, they had them at that same.
Let it off.
Wasn't it this kind of the same score? And then.
They were up by 17, something like that, 17, 20 points.
I thought it was 20.
And then, you know, and then Oregon State decided to not throw the ball, and it worked. And by the way, I do enjoy that Oregon still talks about that all the time. Supposedly when they come into the weight room, that game is playing on the video monitors. Oregon hasn't forgotten about that. And look, if Oregon State's going to win this game, That's what they're going to do. They're going to line up with their backs. There's three of them, and they are going to take Jam Griffin and company, and they're going to try to ram it down Oregon's throat and play keep away and just time control and be more physical. Can you do it? You know, it's, I really like Oregon's D line. I really like Oregon secondary, the linebacking core. Like, you know, we heard from Bassa, who was talking about, you know, the fits, and that was the problem at Boise State, was a lot of the fits. Can you play better disciplined football? And I know Oregon State doesn't have Genty, but they've got a good run game down there. And I'm excited for this one. I can't wait to see it. And if you're Oregon State, don't kick to them. Don't kick to those guys.
Vancouver Fort text line. I certainly don't think the Beavs can win this game on Saturday, but I certainly do think the Ducks can lose this game, if you know what I mean. Well, I do know what you mean by that.
Well, and I want to see, too, from my own, you know, just for my own purposes, I want to see if the Oregon O-line, if these are fixable problems. Like, I don't think that what ails Oregon is, like, the worst thing in the world, but I also don't buy into this. You know, we keep waiting for this. How do you fix this? Find me any team in the country with poor O-line play. It's not just, oh, in a week or two, it's going to get better. O-line problems tend to be O-line problems for an entire year. And yeah, you can get some guys back and shift it around, but whether or not you win this game or not, if Oregon wants to get where Oregon had at a preseason level, when you're talking about not just being a playoff team, but competing for a national title championship, dude, this isn't like a little improvement, and it's not just about the three interior guys. Your tackles, your run game, all of that just needs to get better by leaps and bounds. And I'm telling you, that is way harder than what some people, fans and media members, are making it out to be. O-line problems are not easily fixed.
Well, we'll talk to Joey Harrington about that and more regarding this game coming up next. A quick side note, the Beavers are wearing black, but they say it is still an orange out.
That's so weird. I hope they go with the cursive. I love the cursive.
Yeah, I think they had already called for the orange out for the fans.
Oh,
and yeah, then the team chose black.
Teams usually now put that on your season tickets, yeah, so that you have like months of advance. So like every Oregon ticket, season ticket holder already knows for every game ahead what they're supposed to wear. That's kind of the thing now.
Mm. Okay.
Just when they do the, because I'm not a fan of the Beaver Rat. I wish they would go back to Benny. But even with Benny, the best look that Oregon State runs out there is when they do the old school cursive Beavers. I love it. I'm a big Washington State does it. Even Arizona here with the curse, the Fresno State, the cursive writing on the helmet, that needs to make a big comeback. We need it. Oregon State should make that the permanent helmet sticker. And then have the other one kind of be the alternate, because no one's into the Nutria. No one won't, like the. That's the worst redesign that we've had in the Pac-12 in forever.
Joey Harrington next. Here's Buck.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
All right, well, very odd to be talking about the Civil War in mid-September, but here we are. And here is our friend Joey Harrington live on The Fan.
This is never
true. Did I miss the theme music?
Well, it's Football Friday. Well,
because it's not story time anymore.
It's a sponsored Friday thing, and so yeah, we do the regular open.
It's awkward. It's clunky, Joey.
Just trust us. We don't. Hey, I got a question for you, okay?
Yes.
And we've already bet on this. I already brought this up on the show, and we differ on how we think you'll answer. Okay, so what if I told you that Oregon State wins this game, but I will then guarantee your Ducks a spot in the college football playoff. Are you taking that? With the alternative being, you just play out the season.
No, I'm playing out the season.
So I was right.
All right. I thought you'd take the guaranteed playoff spot.
No. No, I'm playing it out.
Even the way they've looked in the first 2 weeks, you're like, eh. You can't handle losing to the Beavs?
This year's just different, right? And it's a different. Mm. You know, you say, oh, this year's different because there's a lot riding on it. You know, winner goes to the Rose Bowl. You know, those years of what was like 06, 7, 8, 9, where like the winner of the Civil War went to the Rose Bowl. This year is different because, well, we left them for dead. Yeah. I mean, it True. Was, and we've talked about this. I mean, I can't use the proper adjectives on radio, but it was the worst thing. Like, I still cannot believe that Oregon State and Washington State got left out like that. Like, just completely left out in the cold. So there is a little bit of, well, you damn well better back it up. Like, you know, if if you're going to leave us hanging out like that, then you better go and, you know, if you're that much better and you belong in this conference and we don't, then you better go win it. Like, there's just an odd dynamic to it this year, yeah. Which is kind of exacerbated by the way Oregon State has played. Well, I should say the way that Oregon has played and kind of like subpar performance by expectations, and the way that Oregon State has played. Like, these guys have run the football for 3.25 a game.
Yeah.
Like, this is no joke. They're giving up a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Now, granted, like, they're not playing against Ohio State and Michigan and Michigan State right now, but like, this is a pretty decent Oregon State football team, especially compared to what they were supposed to be after losing all of their talent. Yeah. So, like, there's just this really weird dynamic that I don't want to lose this one.
All right, then let's go with this. Let's go with the worry index, 1 to 10, going into Reser, eked out 2 at home, Oregon State on fire, O-line problems. Where's the Joey worry index?
Five?
Yeah. I'd say that's about
because
right.
Because I still look like Oregon is a okay, and maybe this is the conversation to have. I was gonna say Oregon is still a better team. That hasn't been proven. Oregon is a better collection of talent.
Yes.
It is not necessarily a better team. So that I wanna say takes away some of the worry. Like, if it wasn't, if we're talking about a normal year, right, where Oregon State's quarterback hadn't transferred and their quarterback or their coach hadn't bolted for another school and their tailback hadn't had, well, the issues that he had in the offseason. Like, if we're talking about a normal matchup, my worry meter would be significantly higher because talent level would, you know, potentially be on a more even scale. This is an Oregon team that is, I don't know how you quantify it. I mean, are we talking about stars of recruits? But like, this is because of the transfer portal, because of the recruiting job that Dan and Tosh and the rest of them have done. Like, this is a head and shoulders more talented football team at Oregon than Oregon State. They're not playing necessarily better football, but the fact that there is literally at any moment there is a potential to break something open on the Oregon side takes a little bit of that worry away from me. But like you said, that they got a lot of O-line issues. They got to figure this out. You can't live, you know, week to week the way that they have. It's going to bite you in the butt, but I don't think that necessarily induces the worry. What'd you call it? We've dubbed it something, the Joey worry meter, or
the worry
you,
index.
Yeah, the worry index.
The worry index. Yeah. It doesn't jump me above a 5 yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Suk doesn't think that the offensive line issues, while they are not you know, season defining. He doesn't think that's something that's going to get better right away. I think, you know, there's
it's
a lot
of easily fixed.
There's a lot of O-line doctors
out there.
What
and, let's I want to talk, you know, as an O-lineman. Okay. Yeah. On our Talking Duck show, I did, I think we're calling it Doodles with Joey, where I was like, I got a scrap piece of paper here. I can't, without being in the huddle, without knowing their play call, we don't know whether the center's controlling the front calls or the quarterback.
Absolutely.
Fair?
Fair.
Okay. Now, we don't know, without being in the huddle and being in the game plan room, we don't know whether they're running a slide protection, we don't know whether they're running a man protection, we don't know whether they're running or throwing hot off the front side or side adjusting off the back. We don't know those things.
Nope.
Right? Fair?
Absolutely.
Okay. But we do know that something is being missed.
Yes.
Right? And it's not a talent issue. It's not a somebody is getting beat issue. It is a somebody is not communicating issue. Mm-hmm. Fair?
Yes, on a lot of those. I'll push back a little bit, but I see where you're going with this. And absolutely, like the two sacks that Boise State got coming from the outside, neither one of those should have been a sack. Those were someone blew an assignment.
And then the first, hold on. So are you talking about where left tackle tried to cut and the DN jumped over him?
No, we're talking about one with the one that came from the left side is the DN came across the tackle's face. The tackle went all the way down with him. They looped another guy around and he came off of him. So like he never switched with his guard and came off. And then,
okay. But see, here's the thing though. Like I see that as that's a communication issue.
Sure.
Like, that's not a talent issue.
No, yes.
That is a communication. That is like left guard and left tackle. You know it better than anybody. You got to communicate. Like, you got to be hand to hand and touching that guy to the side of you saying, I got him. Here he comes. Like, pass him back. Like, that's stuff like, that's not being less talented than the guy across from.
Yeah.
Right? These issues, I mean, they had two or three guys coming free off the edge.
Yep.
Like, these are issues that are not, well, Oregon's just not as good as their opponent, or a guy just got beat one-on-one. These are literally just, like, communication, who is responsible for what, and to me, that's more fixable.
Sure. I don't disagree with that. I think everything you said there is fair. My thing is, and this is just from me having played the position, and I try to watch O-line play, and I went back and looked at specifically the Boise State game. I went back and tried to look at the Idaho game too, but I spent more time on the Boise State one. And to me, when you get sloppy, I hate calling out college kids, lazy, heavy-footed play. And that's what you have right now. Like, it is lazy, sloppy, flat-footed play. There's one play, the one where Gabriel escaped the sack and ended up with a nice little scramble. They're running a little play action where the right guard pulls and he's making it look like run, and his job is to kick out the defensive end, right? He's setting the edge. He just stops. He just runs out and literally stops in front of the defensive end. The defensive end just runs by him and should have had another sack. Like, and I see guys not moving feet. Again, it just seems lazy, heavy-footed play and really sloppy play. And I'm not saying that it's not fixable, but when you have old lines that play like that, it's not as simple as just a week-to-week, hey, we're going to be better. Some of that stuff tends to be problematic early on when you have O-line, especially against lesser competition. When these things are problems, they can get better, but they tend to be nagging. And I just tell you right now, this will be the weak link on the team all year long. I'm not saying it can't get better. I'm not saying it can't get to a point where you are still an elite team. But we are in week 10. We are going to be sitting here and say the weak link of this offense is going to be that offensive line. I do not think this offensive line if I'm looking into the future, becomes an elite O-line. Can it become a good O-line? Yes. I do not think it's going to become elite with what I've seen in the first 2 weeks.
You will know better than I. Where does the injury situation officially stand right now on this offensive line?
And
who is missing from where?
Yeah.
And with their return, because right now I'm trying to figure out, okay, let's just start there. How many of these offensive linemen that will be playing tomorrow were slated starters at the beginning of the season?
Right now, probably one.
Okay. How many of those four positions that are trying to be filled will be filled by the slated starter at some point in the near future?
Well, it's correct. I was talking about the interior. Both tackles, those guys are there, and one interior lineman. So, yes, I do think at least one, if not two, interior linemen at some point will probably be starting that are not healthy right now. And that can make a world of difference. But I haven't seen them play, and so that's hard for me to go off of. But it's a fair point that 3-4 weeks, when they play Ohio State, this interior line could look completely different because you have different bodies.
Bedford back? Didn't Lanning say Bedford might?
He's being very noncommittal. He gave us a maybe.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. What I'm trying to figure out here, and this is kind of an across-the-board, I was having a conversation with somebody. At times, you don't want to criticize college players.
No, I'm always careful about that. I don't like it.
No. However.
But we do it all the time.
No. But there is kind of this a transition from amateur college players on a $720 scholarship stipend.
Yes.
To paid professional players. Mm-hmm. And I made a comment to somebody the other day that I said, at times it looks like this is just a collection of really talented guys that are just kind of doing their own thing.
I couldn't agree
like,
more.
And it's not necessarily the reading of the press clippings. Because there are no press clippings anymore because you can't clip the internet. Well, I guess you print it and on a computer, and then you could cut it out and put it on. But I digress. Like there is, I don't know. I'm having a hard time deciphering whether this is an injury situation that has caused a little bit of confusion up front, that has consequently thrown a curveball to an incredibly talented group of players that haven't played a whole lot together, right? If you're a group that's, if I had Keenan Howery and Jason Willis, and we had a couple changes up front, Justin Peele, Mo Morris, and we're gonna figure it out, right? Yeah. We got it covered. But this group, led by an incredibly talented quarterback, who's prior to 2 weeks ago had never taken a snap at Oregon, with receivers who had transferred in, with a tailback who was coming off of injury, there are a lot of pieces that are kind of up in the air. So I'm having a hard time deciphering whether it's a curveball being thrown by injuries or whether this is a really talented group of guys that have to figure out how to be a team instead of a group of individuals.
Could it be a little bit of both?
Yeah, fair enough.
Could be a little bit of both.
And to your press clippings thing, I know we're up against it. Everyone wants to bag on the interior offensive line, and I totally get that. The two tackles that you had, one was a preseason All-American, one was an all-conference player. They are not playing to that level either. This is not independent of those two guys either, and I don't like calling out college kids. But like you said, when you're taking money and you're a preseason All-American and you're a preseason all-conference guy and you're supposed to play on Sundays, those two guys are not being the anchors that you need them to be in the pass or the run game. So this whole group needs to get better. It's not, I just don't like sometimes I think we're focusing on one or two kids and if that guy solves his problem, then everything's better. It's not. It's a collective problem. It's five guys across the board.
Well, and it's not, and I know we have to get to break, but it's not even just five guys. You include the quarterback in that, right?
Absolutely.
Because we don't know how those how that's being communicated, whose job it is. There is a group, you know, include a tight end, right? There is a group of people that need to figure this out. You're right. It's not on one or two guys. It's on a collective group that's got to figure it out if they want to be where they are expected to be at the end of the year.
All right, coming up next with Joey Harrington, keys that key things he wants to see more out of Oregon in this game. We'll get to that when we return, courtesy of Mods PDX on The Fan. All right, Oregon State, 12:30 tomorrow here on The Fan. Joey Harrington with us, wrapping things up here. We spoke about the offensive line last segment. Joey, where else are you looking? What else is key to you? What do you want to see more out of Oregon in this game outside of the O-line?
You know what I'd like to see? They took a couple shots in the Boise game, pushed the ball down the field a little bit more than they did against Idaho. And it seemed to spark things in that third quarter, right? They had a couple more, you know, a couple of mid-range, you know, 15, 20, 30-yard balls down the field. There's kind of a, you know, Dylan has done an incredible job, what, 41 of 47? I mean, he's completing over 80% of his passes this year. We all know how college football has changed, and a lot of that stuff happens at the line of scrimmage. And it seems to be either a line of scrimmage bubble screen or something quick, or you're taking a shot, like, down the sideline. They threw three or four balls, some deep crosses. He threw a great seam. Like, there are a couple balls that they threw in that third quarter that seemed to spark the offense a little bit, right? If you're having an issue at offensive line protecting, move the pocket, take a shot into that intermediate range. That put Boise on their heels in the third quarter, and consequently, they were able to run the ball. They were able to get some momentum. Now, had it not been for two fumbles in the fourth quarter, I think it would have been a different game or a different ending. But they had it rolling. I think that's going to be the thing that I'd like to see tomorrow. Is I want to see, instead of just trying to run the ball or throw bubble screens or stuff around the line of scrimmage, and throwing fades up the sideline, I want to see him move the pocket, get Dylan out, on the edge, and throw some of those 20 to 30 yard balls on first and second down. Right? If you can't sit in the pocket and consistently protect, find a way to get on the edge and get the ball down the field to be a catalyst for your other stuff.
Yeah, and if you go back and look, the two big plays that they had, protection on it was beautiful. And they are doing some more play action stuff with the protection and trying to move some stuff. I'm with you. I'd love to see him get out of the pocket more. But yeah, the amount of weapons you have on this offense, it's silly, the number of talented guys. And so I'm with you. This offense, as it continues to evolve, find ways to get vertical and put some pressure. And if you do that too, that'll loosen up some of the run game as well. Just that threat. And you saw it in the second half, like you said, it sparked it. The run game was working. You know, for all the flack that the run game is getting, they were turning out chunk plays against Boise State.
Well, they were turning out chunks because they were able to put Boise on their heels, right? Yeah. If you have a threat, throwing a fade, I mean, what does that really do if you're not hitting it, right?
Yeah.
They were completing the ball 15, 20, 25 yards down the field, which puts them on their heels. Yeah. That's what Bilotti and Tedford were so incredible at, is changing the – hey, we're sitting in the pocket, it's not working. Great. Let's change the launch point. Yeah. Let's work a concept down the field that isn't a 40-yard fade and that isn't just a quick screen, right? There's that intermediate route. There's that intermediate space that often gets overlooked. That is just, I mean, often it's sitting there wide open at times. You just have to scheme the routes in a way to take advantage of it. If it's not getting protected, move them out of the pocket and hit those zones to just soften things up a little bit.
And one of those at Boise State went for a 50-yard touchdown. It was just a simple, I think it was a little simple little slant pattern.
A little slant, yeah, exactly.
And that's my thing, is like, spread them out. You got athletes, man. Put those guys in space. Yeah. When you look at some of the guys they have, it just looks different. Like, from tight end to wide receiver, like, I don't remember a more physically imposing group that Oregon has ever trotted out there on the outside. I mean, I want to get the ball to that Sadiq kid, the tight end they have. Oh my
god. Tight end.
It's like you created him in a lab.
Oh boy!
All right, you going? Are you going to the big game in Corvallis with your Joey Harrington jersey?
I'm going to big game. Yeah,
there's a youth soccer game. I'm guessing.
Oh,
exactly. It's at Delta Park.
Oh,
wow!
It's tough.
Yeah.
Bring the mobile home.
Yeah. That's my life. Like that's where we're living right now.
Yeah. Weekends or soccer
God
games.
Thank God for the Xfinity mobile app.
Well, there you go.
Nice little plug.
I like it.
All right.
There you go.
Well, wear your Joey Harrington jersey so everybody knows who you are, at least.
Oh, or I could just sit in my chair under a tree and not wear my jersey.
Yeah.
Then leave that to your brother. He's out there wearing your Falcons jersey around a casino somewhere.
Do people ever come up to you at games like that? Or, yeah, games and practices and stuff? Talk to you?
Like at the soccer field?
Yeah.
Not in that way, you know. We'll just kind of be talking on the sideline and asking what the score is, and you know, I'll tell them because you know I got my phone sitting there.
Right.
You know, got to hide it though a little bit because you know you can't actually be watching the TV while your kid's playing on the field, right?
Nah, that's poor form. Although I think
that's
we all
bad
do.
Form.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. Yeah. It's one of those hidden, you know, the unspoken truths. So it's like, yep, I'm at the game, but I'm rarely watching the other game.
My dad used to bring a TV to church, and he would sit in the back pew and watch the NFL during church, and it was amazing.
The thing with that, like the big rectangle block with the antennas.
Yeah, he had one of the boom boxes, right? And you know the boom box had a tape player, the radio, and then where the double tape player would be side by side. One of those was like a 6-inch black and white screen, and my dad would bring that to the, and he would sit in the very back pew of church with the antenna up. He would sit at his feet, and my dad would watch like the Seattle Seahawks during church, and it was just like he didn't care. He's like, hey, I'm listening to the Lord and watching. He had the sound off. Yeah, he was great.
What's more exciting, church or a kid's soccer game?
I'm taking a kid's soccer game.
Me too.
All day long.
Yeah.
Well, look, as I learned very, very quickly playing down in the South, that God is a football fan, apparently.
That's right.
So, you know, you know, I don't think anybody's upset about that one.
God wants you watching that football game.
God wants you in that pew watching a football game. God needs you in that pew watching a football game. Deep down in places, you don't talk about at parties.
All right. You enjoy that the real big game tomorrow.
Yeah.
You enjoy that. Thank you.
Exactly. I will.
Have a good one. Have a good weekend. Now, Mods PDX, the future of building is here. I have to play something for you.
Yeah, what do you got?
And those of you that are P1s know the origin of this drop. I'm just going to play this, and then I'm just going to stop talking.
Okay.
We're turning off.
He just threw another effing pick. He has 6 effing picks. Bench his ass. So bad.
Where's the bean when we need him?
So bad. And they're not even close. Like, he's suddenly doesn't see anyone on the defense.
I did catch during, like, Joey's second-to-last response, your hands just go up in the air.
If you don't know, we're
God!
There. Rob is watching the Kansas
Look at Whitebolt. He's as pissed as I am.
He's watching the UNLV-Kansas game, and he's none too happy with with Rock Chalk.
Fire him! All right. I feel better now.
Okay,
hey, we're still winning the game.
You're still winning
the
game.
Put him in jail. Yee-hoo! But not for long.
No.
The club is next on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.